following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Book clubs are back in action, and so are many other fall activities. Audiobooks are the perfect complement to your busy schedule since you can listen while you do other things. Multitasking at its best. You won't be unprepared for book club again. If you're looking for a new book club pick, try the audiobook version. By listening to the story, your group conversation can go to a whole new level. For instance, discuss how the voice of the narrator impacted the story. Listen to new releases such as My Absolute Darling, a debut novel that's been getting rave reviews, or A Column of Fire, the new Ken Follett, and enjoy a whole new book club experience. Visit tryaudiobooks.com/podcast for book club suggestions, discussion questions, and a free full download of an audiobook for your whole book club to listen to. Penguin Random House Audio is the premier award-winning audiobook publisher. 13 Grammy Awards, 69 Audio Awards, and 15 Odyssey Awards. Penguin Random House Audio is dedicated to producing top-quality fiction and nonfiction audiobooks written and read by the best in the business.
In all my years of law enforcement, very few times would I say that I've ever dealt with a true sociopath.
Ms. Quedens was a conniving type person.
Daddy bought the property, and then they had it both in both of their names.
She was going to get this property by whatever means possible.
It was late November 1987. Willie, Fred Wilkerson, was a 49-year-old resident of the city of LaGrange, Georgia, about 60 miles southwest of Atlanta. LaGrange is called a city, but it's really more like a small town. The population at the time was fewer than 25,000. In addition to working as a truck driver, Fred was also chief of the Troop County Volunteer Rescue Squad and a loving father to his son, Tim, and daughter, Tracy. But on that late fall day, the day after Thanksgiving, Fred disappeared. He didn't tell anyone where he was going. He didn't leave a note. He didn't even take a bag or clothes or his wristwatch. He just vanished and didn't come back. What happened to Fred became the talk of the town. Rumors flew. People had suspicions, but the truth remained a mystery for 16 years. From A&E, this is Cold Case Files, the podcast. I'm Brooke. And to tell you the story of this classic case, The Secret in the Well, here's Bill Curtis.
In 1987, Tim Wilkerson is 18 years old, the night his father Fred goes missing.
I knew something was wrong, you know, immediately. When I got inside and saw there was no note or anything. Of course, he was gone, his car was gone, and I thought it was very odd because we always left each other notes where if we left to go somewhere. Of course, the next morning when he still hadn't shown up, you know, as time progressed, I knew more and more that something had happened to him.
Investigator Mike Newsom responds to the missing persons call.
I went to the apartment where Tim and Mr. Wilkerson lived to try to make a determination whether there was any clothing or personal items missing to where it might have looked like he had voluntarily left on his own.
I mean, he hadn't taken anything. He even left his pocket knife and watch, such as that, you know, as if he was just going to run out for a few minutes and, you know, come back.
By Monday morning, Fred Wilkerson has missed 2 days of work. His son fears the worst.
I knew by him missing work, you know, it was getting more and more serious every day, you know. You know, we were calling any friends or family that we had just to see if anybody had seen him. I was pretty much panicking, you know.
And of course, Tim and his sister both really felt like he wasn't strictly a missing person, that something had happened to their father that they felt like he'd been killed.
Four weeks later, on Christmas Eve, Fred Wilkerson's car is discovered at the Atlanta airport.
Okay, right now we're located in the middle deck of the Atlanta airport, south parking, south terminal.
Special Agent Roy Ullinger works the scene.
When I approached the vehicle, the very first thing I saw was the whole vehicle was covered with a thick coat of dust. And I walked around to the driver's side of the vehicle, And
crime scene technicians process the car for fingerprints. Investigators are surprised when the vehicle comes up clean.
It's pretty unusual not to find fingerprints someplace in the vehicle, because anytime you, if you change drivers, you automatically reach up and change the mirror. You leave your fingerprints on the door handle. You've got to close the door. You've got to open the door. You've got usually leave your fingerprints behind.
It would make you think somebody wiped the car down.
Inside the car, investigators find two more pieces of evidence.
Pretty sure it was two payroll checks that were to Mr. Wilkerson from the company he was employed by, which had been left in the vehicle, which of course makes you assume that if he had left on his own, most likely he would have cashed those checks.
Financially, he was in bad shape, so I knew he wouldn't leave payroll checks laying there uncashed, but the investigator at the time said, you know, people do that just to throw you off, you know.
I thought, well, possibly he had gotten on a plane by himself and get away for a while.
Detectives can find no record of Fred Wilkerson taking a flight. And ultimately, the discovery of his car raises more questions than answers.
He was leaving money behind. So that was swaying me more and more and more towards foul play. When talking to Tim, the question, of course, was posed to Tim, if he met harm at someone's hand, who would have done it? And Tim related the story about Connie Quedens.
Connie Quedens is Fred Wilkerson's ex-girlfriend.
Really immediately we knew that Connie was involved, wherever he was at, whatever had happened.
At the time of the disappearance, according to Tim, Connie and Fred's relationship had dissolved into a bitter dispute over this ranch house, resting atop 14 acres of rolling Georgia countryside.
Daddy bought the property, and then they had it both in both of their names.
Tim tells police that the feud began after his father had struck a deal with Connie, signing over his share of the property to her to help her get custody of her children.
And he told me that as soon as she got custody of the kids, she would sign that back over.
Shortly after Fred signed over his share of the property, Tim tells investigators, Connie double-crossed him.
He told me about the relationship, how it went sour, how she kicked him out, called the sheriff's department and kicked him out, and wanted nothing to do with Fred.
I knew that he'd filed suit against her and she was served.
2 days before he disappeared, Fred Wilkerson had sued Connie Quedens, seeking to recoup his investment in the home. Tim believes this to be a motive for murder.
You know, I knew that something had happened when they served her with those suit papers.
We talked to everyone.
Investigators sit down with Connie Quedens to gather her side of the story.
Connie Quedens denied that she has seen Fred at any since the 13th of November.
Connie tells police her relationship with Fred Wilkerson was strictly business.
She denied that having a sexual relationship with Fred. She said that she allowed Fred to move into her house to be close to his work so he could work on the house as the contractor.
From the start, though, the home was to be hers, according to her. And Fred Wilkerson knew that he had no ownership to it.
She was claiming the opposite of what Tim was saying. She was calm, cool, matter of fact, gave no indicators that she was lying.
Detectives have their suspicions about Quedens, but no hard evidence tying her to Fred Wilkerson's disappearance.
Like you say, it was always some information coming up where somebody saw him here, saw him there.
In time, she is placed on the back burner, and the investigation begins to look elsewhere for answers.
They assumed that he had financial problems, and he was a truck driver, so he had a lot of connections, that he just kind of hit the road, you know, just to get away. We always had to leave that little door open, but no, we knew he was not that type of guy. I mean, we just knew that he wouldn't have done that to us.
In the months that follow, records checks show no activity on accounts or the Social Security number belonging to Fred Wilkerson, and a number of sightings turn out to be false leads. Time passes. Wilkerson's fate remains a mystery and soon evolves into the stuff of local legend.
Everybody in town, I guess I say that, most people that I talk to,
Lee West is a newspaper man. In the spring of 1995, he picks up on a hint of rumor about Fred Wilkerson.
The talk around town was that Connie Quaidens actually killed him or had him killed or something because of the squabble over the property out there.
The chatter about Fred picked up after Connie hired a crew to fill in an old abandoned well on the back of her property.
That immediately made us think she's covering something up. And that's everybody's talk was, you know, Fred's in the well.
The local gossip soon becomes local headlines when Connie Quaidens takes legal action to declare Fred Wilkerson dead.
Oh, we were very upset because, I mean, we had nothing to gain by declaring him dead, you know.
Connie, on the other hand, has thousands at stake after making 7 years of payments on a life insurance policy for Wilkerson.
My question was, why would somebody keep paying it each month if they didn't know the person was dead? Because if he'd lived to be 90 years old, they would have, you know, they'd have paid more than they would have collected. But we hired an attorney and learned that there was nothing we could do to stop it.
On May 24th, 1995, Fred Wilkerson is declared dead by a Georgia County judge. A few months later, Connie Quaidens cashes a life insurance check for $12,000.
At that time, we contacted Connie.
Willis Grizzard is an investigator with the Troup County Sheriff. He still has his doubts about Quaidens and asks her to come into the station for a date with his polygraph machine.
So when we set the schedule up, and we scheduled everything, polygraph, she did a no-show.
Connie Quaidens declines to cooperate with the investigation.
We just did not have enough evidence to put us on the property for a search.
I mean, like I say, the libel laws get you. I couldn't say that Fred's in the well.
Fred is in the well. That is the prevailing sentiment in the town of LaGrange, Georgia, where over the years, Wilkerson's fate remains a favorite topic of discussion. Until a rainy night in Georgia, when a burst of lightning turns the local legend into flesh and bone.
More on this case in just a minute. Away is first-class luggage at Coach Price. They create special objects that are designed to be resilient, resourceful, and essential to the way you travel today. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. And no matter what your travel needs are, Away has you covered. You can choose from a variety of colors and four sizes: the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or large. All suitcases made with premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled in strength and impact resistance, and very lightweight. The interior features a patent-pending compression system, helpful for overpackers, like me. Four 360-degree spinner wheels guarantee a smooth ride. TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft. Removable, washable laundry bag keeps dirty clothes separate from clean. I travel a lot for work, and my Away suitcase is my constant travel companion. It's got everything I need, including a rechargeable battery that keeps my phone charged at all times. And it's super sleek, hard-wearing, and easy to maneuver. Both sizes of the carry-on are able to charge all cell phones, tablets, e-readers, and anything else that's powered by a USB cord. A single charge of the Away carry-on will charge your iPhone 5 times. And Away luggage comes with a lifetime warranty. If anything breaks, they'll fix it for you or replace it for your life. If you're still not sold, try the 100-day trial. Live with it, vibe with it, travel with it, Instagram it. If at any point you decide it's not for you, return it for a full refund. No questions asked. Free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48 states. Carry-on sizes that are compliant with all major U.S. airlines while maximizing the amount you can pack. If you're in town, please be sure to visit Away at their retail store in New York. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/coldcase and use promo code coldcase during checkout. That's $20 off a suitcase. Visit awaytravel.com/coldcase and use promo code coldcase during checkout. awaytravel.com/coldcase.
Hey there, I'm Victoria Shade, the host of PetMD's Life with Pets, where we celebrate pets and the people who love them. Each week on the show, I'll explore a different facet of pet parenting, from troubleshooting challenges like litter box problems to dealing with muddy paw prints on the couch to learning all about how you can help dogs and cats by fostering. You'll hear from amazing guests, and on most episodes, you'll also hear from Millie, my studio pup who likes to snore in the background. We've got new episodes launching every Monday, so make sure to listen exclusively at PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts. And it would be great if you could rate and review the show so other pet parents can find it. That's PetMD's Life with Pets. Learn, laugh, and become a better pet lover along the way.
Fred Wilkerson disappeared from the town of LaGrange, Georgia in the fall of 1987. Nobody knew for sure where he was or what had become of him. All the town had was rumors. But most of those rumors pointed toward Fred's ex-girlfriend, Connie Quedens. Fred and Connie had been going through a dispute over a piece of property. The local legend was that Connie had killed Fred and buried him on that very property, beneath the filled-in well. Connie even had a judge declare Fred officially deceased in 1995, then quickly cashed in on a life insurance policy she had for him. Connie wasn't cooperating, and the police didn't have anything to go on but rumor and legend. But all that was about to change, thanks to a storm.
We had a storm come through LaGrange, Georgia. All of a sudden, the lights went off in my house.
Pete Skandalakis is the district attorney working in Troup County, Georgia. In the spring of 2003, a thunderstorm topples a pine tree, crushing his brand new pickup truck.
I walked out, I saw my truck had been crushed by the tree, and I started laughing, and I said, okay, God, why me? Why is this going to happen? I know there's some reason.
The reason remains a mystery until Skandalakis pilots his crippled truck to a nearby body shop owned by Tim Wilkerson, the same Tim Wilkerson whose father Fred went missing in 1987 and has not been seen since.
Tim was aware of the fact that we had recently solved another cold case file.
The Troup County DA's office had recently made headlines after cracking a 33-year-old murder case in the nearby town of Hogansville.
I didn't know any of the really details, but when I knew that it was 20-something years old, I felt for the family. I mean, I thought that was great.
When Wilkerson mentions his father's disappearance, Skandalakis listens and remembers.
I was familiar with that case because I was an assistant DA when Mr. Wilkerson disappeared. Plus, I was not satisfied with the conclusion that some people had that Mr. Wilkerson had run away and had simply abandoned his family.
He was not the kind of man that would leave his family.
Clay Bryant is a special investigator with the Troup County DA. At the request of Pete Skandalakis, Bryant pulls out the Wilkerson file and meets with the Wilkerson family.
That's a good picture, y'all.
After an hour with them, I was very well satisfied that the man had met with a untimely demise.
Clay begins his investigation with a focus on the only suspects mentioned in piles of casework.
Connie Quedens was our number one suspect.
Fred disappeared in the midst of a legal battle with Connie over a house they once shared. 7 years later, Connie petitioned the court to have Fred Wilkerson declared dead. She then collected on a life insurance policy in his name.
Everybody suspected Connie. But there was never a physical tie of Fred to Connie at the time of his disappearance.
In search of that connection, Bryant digs into the cold files and finds a handful of unresolved leads, including one that's been bugging Tim Wilkerson for 8 years.
I'm sure the first day I told him Lisa Holderman.
Lisa Holderman is a former friend of Connie Quedens. In 1995, she contacted the Wilkerson family attorney, claiming to have information about Fred's disappearance. At the time, efforts to follow up with Lisa for an interview failed.
At that point, I said, we got to talk with her.
Freaked me out. I was so not expecting that call.
On September 5th, 2003, Investigator Bryant tracks down Lisa Holderman, now Lisa Holderman Miles, and listens to her story.
This is the article.
It begins 8 years earlier on the front page of the LaGrange Daily News.
My mom and I, we were reading the newspaper.
Like most of LaGrange, the Haldermans were buzzing about Fred Wilkerson and Connie Quedens.
That's been a rumor around town.
Yeah.
Fred's down Quedens' well.
Specifically, Connie's push to have Fred declared legally dead.
You don't declare someone dead unless you know they're dead.
That'd be my thought on it, too. Said in the paper that they had found Fred's car at the airport because it kind of just gave a background about what had happened and how it transpired and that they had found his car at the airport.
A champagne-colored 1987 Honda was...
When I heard that, you know, it was like, oh, you know, I drove to the airport for her at that time.
According to Lisa, in 1987, at around the time Fred Wilkerson disappeared, she made a trip to the Atlanta airport at the request of Connie Quedens.
She just asked me to come up and pick her up, just pick her up at the terminals, and she'd be out there waiting for me. She was standing at the pickup waiting for me. She was by herself, just standing there waiting. I seen her, I picked her up, and we drove back to LaGrange. Probably took me about an hour.
Lisa never gave the road trip a second thought until 8 years later, in 1995, when she read about the discovery of Fred Wilkerson's car at the Atlanta airport.
That's when I really started thinking, oh man, you know, she could have done this. She took the car. She had to have taken the car.
The car was found within 200 yards of where Connie was standing.
Lisa's tip gives investigators the link they need to break the stalemate with Connie Quedens.
Her statement was the one thing that we used to tie her to Fred's disappearance.
Clay had even asked me, he's like, well, you know, do you have any idea where you think he is? I said, I have the same idea everybody else has. He's in the well on her property.
Sixteen years after Fred Wilkerson disappeared, the legend of his demise is about to be put to the test.
If you'll look on top of the knob as we get here, where that piece of pipe is denotes where the cylinder of the well was located itself. The well was approximately, I'd say, 4.5 feet across. It was an old hand-dug well.
Armed with a search warrant, a team of detectives begins digging up Connie Quedens' well.
And I told Connie, I said, well, we're going to search your property, and we're going to start at the location of the old well. And her statement was, if he's in there, I don't know anything about it.
By 10 a.m., the excavation is well underway. Meanwhile, inside the home, Investigator Bryant is digging at Connie Quedens.
I said, well, Connie, we have a young lady that's come forward that says she picked you up at the airport when you drove Fred's car up there. At that point, she came unglued. She said, I took the car to the airport, but I didn't kill him.
Less than 40 minutes after Connie's admission placing her in Fred Wilkerson's car, investigators unearth what appears to be Wilkerson himself in Connie's well.
We're about 20 foot down, and we've made a discovery at this point, and so we've stopped operations at this time about 12 o'clock to find out exactly what we got. We think we found human remains.
As I walked up to the well site, the excavation itself was massive, and in the center of the excavation, down the cylinder of the well, there was a single human, what appeared to be a human femur, sticking up.
The skeleton is wrapped in a roll of carpet and carries a number of personal items that lead investigators to believe it is indeed Fred Wilkerson.
They reached in the pocket and pulled out chapstick, and that was one of the things that he told it everywhere he went, you know.
Found his chapstick, his dentures, the pants were the correct size for Fred Wilkerson.
And it was hard to see. It was hard. I mean, that was a roller coaster day. We were, you know, happy one moment and crying the next.
An examination of the skull reveals evidence of a single gunshot to the back of the head. Connie Quedens is handcuffed and spirited away in a sheriff's car. With a human skeleton pulled from her well, she has a lot of explaining to do.
Ms. Quedens had, I think, two defenses. One defense was it wasn't Mr. Wilkerson in the well. And number two, if it was Fred Wilkerson in the well, she didn't put him there.
The state attacks Quedens' first line of defense with a combination of circumstantial evidence and the results of mitochondrial DNA testing performed on the skeleton.
The remains in the well were from a descendant of Fred Wilkerson's family. And since there were no other members of Fred Wilkerson's family missing, we knew that was Fred Wilkerson.
With Fred Wilkerson resting at the bottom of Connie Queden's well, entitled to his home now conveniently resting in Connie's hands, all Skandalakis has to do is ask the jury to connect the dots.
What we wanted to show is that Miss Queden's was a conniving type person and that she was going to get this property by whatever means possible. And once it became apparent that Mr. Wilkerson was going to sue to get his piece of the property back or at least get monetary damages, that put the motive on Miss Queden's to eliminate Mr. Wilkerson.
You know, I was worried to the end. I mean, I just kept thinking she would pull some way to pull out of it. You know, she always had for so many years.
For the Wilkerson family, 17 years of waiting for justice comes down to 2 hours of waiting for a Troup County jury to find Connie Queden's guilty of their father's murder. Queden's draws a life sentence, but under Georgia statutes in effect at the time of the crime, she will be eligible for parole in 7 years.
However, the Board of Pardons and Paroles has discretion on whether or not to parole her. And what they would do in this case is look at the fact that for 17 years, she has gotten away with murder. And I doubt very seriously if the Board of Pardons and Paroles will release Miss Queden's in the near future, if ever at all.
The end to this case not only brings a killer to justice, but brings a father home.
It's wonderful to have a place to come and just remember him.
A family once haunted by questions now holds answers. And while those answers may never bring a father back to life, it does bring a small bit of peace.
That's why we chose the doves for the marker, because it just seemed appropriate for peace, finally.
For investigators, Fred Wilkerson's case was as much a matter of fate as it was evidence.
God has a plan for everything. There's no other way to describe it except divine intervention.
A thunderstorm and a felled pine tree guiding a prosecutor to a son who needed help with his father's murder.
It is divine intervention. I'm a firm believer that God moves us in different ways, and this is the way that the good Lord brought me to Tim Wilkerson and brought Tim Wilkerson to me, and we were able to solve this murder.
Connie Queden's was found guilty of murder and possession of a firearm during a crime in November of 2004, nearly 17 years after Fred Wilkerson's disappearance and death. Connie appealed her case to the Supreme Court of Georgia, which upheld the initial ruling. In 2006, Fred's children, Tim and Tracy, filed a wrongful death civil suit against Connie and her husband Gary, demanding $22 million in damages. They claimed Gary had been involved with Fred's disappearance from the beginning, as he had sold a .38 caliber pistol believed to be the murder weapon just a few days after Fred disappeared. A Troup County judge dismissed the case, saying that it fell outside the statute of limitations. As it turned out, Connie was not eligible for parole 7 years after her conviction. According to the Georgia State Board of Pardons and Paroles, parole-eligible offenders serving a life sentence for a serious violent felony, such as murder, committed prior to July 1, 2006, are initially considered for parole after serving 14 years. As of this recording, Connie Queden's is still actively serving her sentence in Pulaski State Prison. She's not currently scheduled to come up for parole. Whether or not that will change remains to be seen. Cold Case Files, the podcast, is hosted by Brooke Giddings. Produced by McKamey Lynn and Scott Brody. Our executive producer is Ted Butler. We're edited by Steve Dolemater and distributed by Podcast One. Cold Case Files Classic was produced by Curtis Productions and hosted by the one and only Bill Curtis. Check out more Cold Case Files at AETV.com and by downloading the A&E app.